Drink in the shoulder.
All right, ladies. Up, 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 up.
This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to Nordic Nation from Faster Skier. At 38 years old, Paralympic biathlete and sit skier Dan Nossen is coming off a 6-medal performance in Pyeongchang. Continuing on the academic front, Nossen graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy and holds a master's in public administration to go along with his master's in theological studies. He was also a platoon commander in the Navy SEALs when he was injured in Afghanistan in 2009. He's also the recipient of both a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star with Valor. We begin the interview with Nossen answering how he became a para-athlete.
Sure, I'll try to tackle that. I was serving in the military in the U.S. Navy at the time of my injury, which occurred in 2009, and in that injury resulted in the amputation of both of my legs above the knees, and so I found myself in a hospital rehabilitation environment for up to about 2 years, and in that process was exposed to the Paralympic organization through recruitment that they were doing at the military hospital Walter Reed, and pretty quickly gravitated towards biathlon because of the shooting and the skiing, the moving and shooting. I felt like this is a pretty good transition. It would kind of reclaim what I felt like I had lost with not being able to do my primary job in the military anymore as a SEAL officer. And furthermore, cross-country skiing enabled me to get, and I think this is the most important thing, to get back into the woods, to get into nature. This was something I really craved. And I, at the time, I felt like there's actually not really any other viable way to get into trails. I loved trail running before my injury. So cross-country skiing really got me back into nature. I just needed it to be winter time. And I was really hooked, really, really hooked on it. Both sports. I love so much about both of them. And I love the fact that on the Paralympic team, we can do both, because there's obviously the common thread is cross-country skiing, but in their subtle ways, the more you know, one gets into each sport, they're very different sports. And that has been really a huge portion of my life for 7 years now, since 2011. I trained in Colorado while still remaining on active duty for the Sochi Paralympic Winter Games in 2015. I exited from the military, retired, found myself in graduate school in Boston. I was looking to do a one-year program at Harvard Kennedy School, which I did. I found like that Boston was a really good environment, that it provided wonderful academic and intellectual stimulation, but I'm still at a gateway city to ski country, and that I'm still able to train. And I didn't really compete that year, but I convinced myself that it would be possible to still be a student and train, given the current kind of situation that I was in. And I found the Harvard Divinity School to be a very, very appealing program, and applied there and got in. And so I did kind of 3 years and 2 master's degrees. And the balance that I achieved was really great between the mind and the body. And I found that the academics channeled my workouts, and that the workouts were a nice distraction from the academics. And so that kind of brings me up to Korea, where I really devoted the last semester of my 3 years to getting up to Craftsbury, Vermont, and training. It's such a wonderful, wonderful venue up there, and from the owners to the groomers to the people working in the kitchen and to everyone at the Nordic Center, they were so supportive, and their staff, the GRP coaches, were working with me in biathlon, and it was just awesome to go up there. And I would drive up on Thursdays and come back on Mondays. In the 5 weeks leading up to Korea. Prior to that, I had done a long winter camp in Montana. And so went to Korea and then came back in a couple, was really focused at that point on graduating. And, that's kind of where you have me now. I've just finished my 3 years of school, and I'm looking to continue as a Paralympic athlete, but, find some other avenues to, occupy myself as well.
Gotcha. And so, I mean, wow. You just gave a synopsis in about 5 minutes, and I know there's a ton of detail that I'm imagining you grew up in a family that was like, try not to draw a ton of attention to yourself and do your job and do it well. So,
Yes.
So I kind of actually, one thing that caught my eye, you know, kind of doing some background research is that you, you're from Topeka, Kansas.
Correct.
And you grew up on what sounds like a fifth generation family farm.
Yeah, I did. It was amazing.
You know, what was your athletic outlet back in, say, like middle school and high school? Obviously, I know it snows on occasion in the High Plains, but it's not necessarily something that we think of as like biathlon and cross-country ski country.
Well, yeah, I absolutely was a soccer player. I loved playing soccer, but to be honest, I wasn't really that great. What I was good at, though, was the running part of it, and I had gravitated towards team sports. That's kind of like, my parents were never pushing me any direction, but it was just kind of, in Kansas, that's just kind of what you do. You play team sports. And when I knew my senior year of high school that I was going to the Naval Academy, I thought, I need to show up there just in tip-top shape. And that you know, involves push-ups and pull-ups, but running as well. And I knew I was a good runner, and I thought, well, I'll just do the track team. And I ran the 2 mile and the 1 mile, and I was actually pretty good at it. And I think that could have been I don't exactly have the right body type to be an elite cross country runner, but I was pretty good. I would have loved and been and decent at cross country skiing. It just wasn't in the cards for my youth, but in a way I think it worked out well, because had I been a cross country skier before and then lost my legs, I'm not sure that I would want to sit ski. I might be constantly comparing my current self to my former self, and I don't want to do that. I want to be doing new things, and cross country skiing was new and it was exciting, something I'd never done. I've since also gotten into surfing, and it's not something I had really done before. So I think there's something to be said for kind of reinventing the self after a major injury or a setback, and not trying to reclaim the former self.
I read something about you know, where you had talked about how, just like you had just explained, like why cross country and biathlon was appealing to you, and that it's something new. Maybe, you know, if the listeners are not familiar with your accident, and I don't want to, if you can kind of describe, you know, what you experienced and how that brought you into, you know, the cross country biathlon scene. I know you're a double amputee, and I've read a little bit about what occurred, but I would rather hear from you.
Sure. Yes. I had been, I went through SEAL training for the Navy, fresh out of the Naval Academy when I was 22 years old. And I started that SEAL training. Is called BUDS, Basic Underwater Demolition / SEAL training. And at its shortest, it's about 6 to 7 months if you don't have any sort of medical or performance setbacks. And that's not the entirety of the initial training, though. That initial training is about 15 months if you, again, get through it in one shot. And I was lucky to get through it and graduated in 2003. So I was a deployable SEAL from 2003, September, to my injury in 2009. And as an officer, I did various jobs and worked my way along the career pipeline to become a platoon leader. It's not something that you do right away, unlike the infantry, where a brand new officer takes charge of a platoon. And in the SEAL community, you do an assistant platoon commander tour that involves a 2 year kind of workup, or well, a year and a half workup followed by a 6 month deployment. So it's a 2 year cycle. And so I had done a couple deployments, and then was finally a platoon leader, which was an amazing honor and responsibility to be in charge of a 20 man SEAL platoon, and went through the entire workup, and we were slated to deploy to Afghanistan in, really October of 2009. But I had gone, on like a more forward advanced deployment a few weeks early, just to learn the lay of the land, see what the unit that we were going to be replacing was doing, how they were planning and conducting operations. So I was in advance of the majority of my platoon. And on a particular night, I went out with that unit that my platoon would be replacing, and as a shadow, essentially. And that's when I stepped on an IED at night on a assault operation that we were conducting. And it was a pretty significant blast that rendered me very much in shock. But no teammates were injured. Fortunately, the guys really did a wonderful job of reacting and assessing the situation, assessing not only the broader tactical situation, but also my medical condition. And that required me to be medevaced very quickly. But the problem was there's no way to do that. We're kind of in the middle of nowhere in southern Afghanistan. So helicopters were summoned, and that was all done very well. And we had to get me into a suitable place to land the helicopters, and that was done. It took some time, and this is just a situation of like racing against the clock. I had many tourniquets applied to both of my limbs. I was conscious at the time. I didn't know that I didn't have legs, but they might have been dangling there in shreds. I'm not exactly sure. I couldn't see anything anymore. My night vision goggles were gone, and I was really just mainly trying to stay awake and not be too much of a liability vocally. So they did a wonderful job, and I have those guys really to thank first and foremost, and then second, the pilots who got there, and they were running low on fuel. And then there happened to be a flight surgeon on board, and I don't know who that individual is, but I have that person to thank. And then got me back to Kandahar Airfield, and the surgeons took it from there, and I was put in a medically induced coma for several days. My condition was grave, but it did get better eventually. And at one point, doctors weren't sure if I would make it or not, but I did. And this was all just happening as I'm unconscious, going through surgeries and debridement, and worked my way back to Bagram Airfield and then Landstuhl, Germany. And finally was in Bethesda at the Naval Hospital in Maryland. And at that point, and this is maybe 8 days later, they lifted the coma and I woke up and I was in an ICU, and my mother and sister were there. They had gone through an ordeal that I only heard about later. But I, at that point, went through many, many more surgeries, and it was definitely challenging, to say the least, mentally. I acquired SEAL training was tough in the sense that physically it pushes you to the edge, and therefore mentally, in many ways, and many people succumb and bow out or get injured or come up with excuses. For whatever reason, they don't get through. But this was different for me because at this point, I don't have a choice to quit. Or, I mean, I'm in the hospital. I have to go on. And I was dealing with a lot of pain. And it also seemed, I mean, it's tough for anybody to lose their legs and above the knee. And for me, I felt like it was particularly cruel because I really felt like I used my legs a lot. And I would take, you know, the precious times before a deployment or after a deployment, when you're actually off and you can take some vacation, I would go down to Patagonia to hike, mountaineer, or one particular time coming back from Iraq, I went up to Yosemite to do a solo backpack trip. And I was always trail running. I just felt like one of my friends told me, like, gosh, if anybody to lose the legs, it was really unfortunate for you in particular because of just how much I was always outdoors doing stuff. And I just felt like this is unfortunate, but I had a lot of optimism about what prosthetics could do. And some of that was false optimism that I came later to find out once I got to the stage of physical therapy, that the prosthetics for the knees are not quite as good as you might think, and that they're pretty difficult to use in off-road situations, and maybe hiking isn't going to be the thing that I do now, but it could be done. But it may not be done at a high level of achievement, and I can't help but compare to the things I was doing before. So this all kind of is paving the way towards me getting into cross country skiing, I think, as you can see. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. So let me take a step back there, and I'm kind of curious where you're. I mean, you're right. A lot of people would fold many times during the steps that you sort of were exposed to as on your road to recovery. Someone says to me, yeah, they went through SEAL training. You're like, gulp, you know, you feel puny. You know, I am curious, you know, what was it about you or what got you through you know, exactly. I mean, you're someone who like self-describes themselves as loving the outdoors and specifically the kinesthetic piece of being outdoors. You know, you're not just like plopped down on a bench checking out a view. You're like getting your heart rate up, experiencing, you know, the ground under your feet, so to speak. Yeah, what was that like? Like, and what did they provide you? I'm sure there was tons of counseling. If you can just talk a little bit about that process.
Yeah, thanks for the comments and the question. I really think that there were two aspects of to get through SEAL training. One is the network that you have of your friends and peers that are going through it. On one hand, you don't want to get too close to people who may end up quitting. But I was in a little bit of a different situation because I came from the Naval Academy, and we were very, very well screened at that point, the brand new ensign officers that were going through. And I lived with five other guys that were going through this exact same training. And so there was just simply no way that I would quit and go back to that apartment and have to deal. Like, it's just not an option. And everybody's situation in SEAL training is different. Not everybody's in that kind of a situation, but it does lead me to believe that there is really something about your social and family and friend network that really can help you advance and get through tough times. And then the other thing is the kind of the mindset that it requires to get through something like Hell Week, which is one of the more notorious weeks in SEAL training. It's just 1 week out of 26 weeks, but it tends to get the most amount of attention and the most amount of quitters. And the mindset there, I think that is necessary to get through the training is one that kind of focuses more on the short term, keeping the long term goal of getting through the week in mind, but in the back of the mind, because to think about when it starts on Sunday, to think about Friday when it ends, knowing that you're not even going to sleep once until Wednesday, that can just break someone down mentally. And really, and even the instructors gave us a lot of wisdom before. They said, you know, you just need to focus on the current evolution. What is the immediate task at hand? And for me, I had a series of goals. Like in the middle of the night, I was just really trying to, my midterm goal was to get to when the sun came up, because the sun coming up would just really rejuvenate you and you would feel more energy. But the short-term goal could be to get just through this evolution, not knowing how long it's going to take. So there's this kind of unfolding from the long-term into the midterm to the short-term into the actual like immediate moment. And that process is focusing maybe just getting through now so that you can get to that next meal. That kind of a mindset really can help as well get through adversity. And this applies to racing too, I think. Absolutely. In long distance races, you know, you can't be thinking, I've got to do a 20K ski race. It's more about like, okay, this thing it's four laps. How am I going to apply? And in your thing, what am I going to, you know, the longer goal is to finish as fast as you can. But then the midterm goal is to do an appropriately paced plan. The immediate is attacking this hill or this piece of terrain in the appropriate technical way. And what it, you know, how am I feeling right now? Am I pushing it too hard? Do I need to push harder? So it all kind of goes together.
It sounds like you, for lack of a better word, it's sort of like, it's not a job fair, but it's like you're being exposed to options for amputees. It sounds like, you know, they were essentially recruiting athletes. And all of a sudden you, and as you described, you were kind of seeking something new, something other than you were, had been exposed to in the past. And you got involved with the cross country and biathlon team, the para teams, and you ended up at a camp in Montana. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. Good research.
I can only imagine just talking to you now for like 22 minutes, but they must have been salivating. I mean, one is you just said, and like all your training can be applied to like breaking down race strategy. You're clearly tough. You know, what kind of sales pitch did they give you? It's like, hey, you know, that made you buy the biathlon cross country sales pitch rather than some other para sport.
Well, the recruiting coach, the coaches that were at the recruiting that I did in San Diego, they were they came more from the biathlon background, and they were definitely selling me on the you know, it's shooting with a heart rate, shooting under pressure. This sport has its roots in Scandinavia, coming from I think, you know, military roots in those countries, in Norway and Sweden, and it's highly busy in terms of travel. So you're gonna feel like kind of like in the military, because you're gonna be training as part of, even though you race as an individual, you have a support network, which is very common to the military. You know, there's a coach, there's a training plan, there's wax technicians, there's physiologists, there's nutrition. All of these support nodes come together. You will be traveling quite a bit, and you'll be training, and you'll see progress. This is all kind of really resonating with me. Although I had said earlier that you may want to look at reinventing yourself, I do think we kind of fall back on the person that we were after a major setback. And this just seemed like a pretty good transition for me, coming from the SEAL operational tempo.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of, obviously, sliding on snow was, I'm imagining, like a completely new experience for you. You know, how tough is that to learn? You know, you're trying to go downhill, you're trying to stay in the tracks, you're double pulling uphill. Is that something that came easy, or was it like, oh my gosh, this is frustrating, and I just have to kind of persevere?
Yes, it's very tough to go from, you know, really relying on the use of one's legs to now being in a sit ski. For anybody to sit ski, I think the scariest thing in the beginning is the question: how am I actually going to stop? I can't tow in my skis or anything. Okay, you can drag your poles, but that only works so well. And if you start doing that when you're already at high speed on a downhill, that can have really bad results, because it kind of force you to tumble. Or so it's pretty scary for one. But then number two, the amount of core and upper body strength that's required to just get up the hill or to go, and you know, it's pretty significant. I think you could take an accomplished cross country skier, and they sit ski pretty well, but you can, I mean, I thought, well, I've done a lot of swimming, I think I'll be okay. I have good strength, but I didn't have the technique. It really was humbling. It really, but at the same time, I realized through seeing my teammates, Andy Sewell and Sean Halstead, and how fast they were, that I think this is attainable. I just need to train, and I need to move somewhere where there's going to be snow a decent amount of the year. And then it's a matter of just following the training plan, and I'll see progress. That's really nice to see. Anytime you can see progress, it's really rewarding. And starting as slow and uncoordinated as I am, I will see progress at this point. So it's motivating. And more than anything, it was really neat just to be outside in the woods and on snow, and having that mobility, not just like doing snowmobiling, but moving under my own power, and seeing wildlife. It's been in one way, it was therapeutic even for me to do this. But then the better one gets, I can just think back to that camp at Bozeman, Montana in late 2010, and just say to myself, wow, I can't believe how new I was. But that it just required consistency, really, and consistency is so important in training.
It's amazing. And I'm looking at, I mean, you came out of Pyeongchang, I think with 3 medals. Is that right?
I had, entered 6 races, 3 biathlon races and 3 cross country races. And I was able to get a medal in all 3. So that all 6. So 3 of each discipline, and that consistency, is what I'm most proud of.
That's pretty insane. I mean, you know, you've obviously been through a lot, but you sound you've been through a lot. And is this something, are you rather than clearly there's like the day-to-day consistency and being methodical, but without the goal of like medals hanging out there, you know, and it's not low hanging fruit. I mean, that's like as high hanging fruit probably as you can imagine. Without that, how, you know, would you have been able to stay as driven?
Well, it's this interesting mindset I've been working on. I think that, one, I want to say, I think society equates success as getting medals. And I've lately been trying to rearrange the way that I think about it and try to let go of that kind of definition of success. And that the success, in quotes, if you want to call it that, is just the process. It's the training. And that is ultimately what it mattered about. Some athletes may need the more quantifiable results to have endorsements and sponsorships and opportunities to monetize what they love to do. But I'm generously being taken care of by the VA and it's just a matter of loving this sport just for what it is and loving the training and loving going up to Craftsburg and doing intervals and doing biathlon combos. And I started to just think that was the most important thing and that I had put too much pressure on myself in Sochi because I felt like as an active duty military person at that time that I needed to, you know, get a medal. But then I did it. The Russians were on fire and it was a tough, very tough field of competition. And I came back and I ended up in school and this is kind of like the decision point where I'm either going to continue on down this trajectory that school is taking me, or I'm going to continue doing what I know that I love and what I still have potential to do well in. And I learned some things in school, and one of them is just to kind of not focus too much on these things that society deems as representing success. And so I let go of those attachments and focused on what I love, and I love training. And then when I showed up in Pyeongchang, I had kept telling myself that the only thing that really matters is just what I can actually do. How far can I push myself? How fast can I go in a way that's smart? Cross the line. During the race, don't look at the Jumbotron. Don't listen to the announcer. If his or her voice comes into my head, it'll pass out the other ear. It doesn't matter what they're saying. It doesn't matter. All that matters is just what I'm doing and how hard I'm pushing myself. And then across the line and don't look at the Jumbotron. Just ask myself quickly, did I give it everything that I could have given? And was this good? And one of the races I crashed, and I had to kind of gather myself mentally. And that's more than any other moment is what I'm most proud of, because it's not so much a matter of how you're doing mentally when things are going your way. It's more about how do you react when something that you don't plan for happens. And that if I cross the line, if I gave it my all, then that's all I can be happy about. And that's kind of a cliche, but to really believe it, I think is very powerful as an athlete, that it's just about what you can do.
You know, I'm curious, you know, when you talk about those things, and I know you're a divinity student, and have you completed that degree at this point?
I have, yes, 2 months ago.
Okay. So congratulations. And how long was that program?
Thank you. That was a 2-year program.
Okay.
I did it full time. So it was 4 semesters.
I'm curious what you learned in that program, and maybe describe to people what a divinity program is. I mean, I had a friend who went through a divinity program, I don't know, 25 years ago. I was like, wait, is he becoming a priest? Or is he becoming a Catholic priest? Like I had no framework for it. So what that is, and I'm curious, like what you've learned and been able to apply as an athlete in that program.
It was the Harvard Divinity School is a wonderful program for me. There's two different main programs within the school. One is a 3-year program, and I did it, which focuses more on ministry, but from a multi-religious outlook. I was in the 2-year program, the Master of Theological Studies, and that's more of a academic study of religion, and there's different concentrations. You have, what's really neat about it, you have students that are coming from Sri Lanka as Buddhist monks, or their students that are Hindu, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, and other religions, atheists, agnostic. You have people that are just from all over the world, really. And the diversity of belief is pretty impressive. I concentrated in religion, ethics, and politics. I thought it made sense. I was coming from the Kennedy School of Government and wanted to take more classes back at the Kennedy School, and I did. But I took a class on Buddhism because I was kind of intrigued by it. I took a class on Hinduism, and I took a class on philosophy of life as viewed in the East and the West. And the program in general, I would say, is very intellectually rigorous. It's kind of philosophy meets this sort of like applied religion, and it's really great. Buddhism resonated with the athlete in me, because it's about, you know, the first noble truth in Buddhism is that everything is suffering, and the reason that we suffer is because of ego and desires, but that can be broken through meditation and through proper living and all that. But the athlete in us kind of seems like, wow, okay, this is about suffering, and you know, how can you in maybe the ego has become too big. How do I like kind of reduce my ego? Because the ego is what's the medals and all that kind of stuff. But that's not what's important. Let go of that stuff and like focus on doing what you love and focus on the natural world and being in the moment and all of that. And I'm not a Buddhist, but it was really, really interesting just to learn about another way of thinking and then apply it to what I do. I love the program at the Divinity School. It's a very multi-religious place, and so you get a variety of perspectives. It was wonderful.
Are you the type of person, I mean, we're all people, right? And so I'm just making the general statement that like everyone sort of struggles with like highs and lows. You obviously have a lot to be fortunate about. One is you're, you know, for all practical purposes, you're a healthy, thriving human being, right?
Yep.
But that could have turned out much differently. And I'm just trying to think of like, you don't really know what you have until you've lost something. And we all in life, whether it's the death of someone close to you or you witness an accident, mm-hmm. You sort of have that wake up moment. And that wake up moment may last for like, if you're lucky, a month, and you don't take things for granted. I'm kind of curious, is because to me, you know, when I listen to your experience, you know, one is your schooling at the Naval Academy and Divinity School, and the other is the real world experience of, you know, being involved with a catastrophic incident in warfare. You know, do you two have those moments where you take things for granted, or are you kind of like, I don't know, like, I don't want to say superhuman, but because of what you've been through, it's like every day you're like, oh my gosh, I'm thankful. This is all good.
Yeah, no, I sometimes come down pretty hard on myself because I can quickly remember and go back to 2009 when I wasn't allowed to drink water due to the condition of my intestines and stomach. And so I was being hydrated intravenously and not allowed to eat either. Just getting calories intravenously as well. So I was under strict orders not to put anything down my throat. And just to kind of satiate my mouth, I was allowed to have ice chips. And at one point I OD'd on ice chips, so to speak, because a friend had stuck in a bucket, and I'm in the ICU and I shouldn't have done it, but it, like, I was just craving water so much. And I was just telling, like, at the minimum, before I was craving food, it was just to drink water. I wanted water so bad. And this is for several weeks. I had a NG tube up my nose, down the back of my throat, into my stomach, trying to decompress my intestines. And I have water in front of me right now, and I just took a sip a few minutes ago and didn't even think about it. It's just the state of the human mind, I think, is just to kind of naturally take things for granted. We can try to remind ourselves not to do that, but it's just, I think we're human, and it's just natural. But we recognize that, and recognizing that everything is impermanent is important, and that therefore we should appreciate the moment and be in the moment.
So what is your, it sounds like you want to continue with parasport. What does that look like for you? Like, what does that mean? Is that like the Olympic level, or is that like you're going to dial it back a bit?
Oh, I'm very, very much looking forward to competing next season and training, taking it year by year, see how my body feels. I just turned 38. I think I have a few more years in the sport and still being able to improve. And sometimes the improvement comes because of more of the wisdom aspect and just being more experienced in races. And that I'm focusing more on taking care of my body in ways that I didn't before, really doing a good job of getting massage, going to see the chiropractor and taking care of my shoulders. And I hope that I've learned the importance of not overtraining, because as a graduate student, I was forced to economize. And because of that, I didn't overtrain. And then I could see my results going up my results shouldn't have been going up, because I was burdened quite often with schoolwork, but because I was forced to rest, I then saw what that meant. And so I need to not overtrain right now as I get older too. So very much, I just asked myself, am I looking forward to going up to Craftsbury, Vermont and doing intervals this winter? And the answer is yes. Am I looking forward to racing? Of course. But even the training and this parts that aren't as glamorous, because, you know, no one sees it. That's actually what I think I like the most, is the training. And then, of course, the competitions are fun too, but I'm very much fired up about it. And it didn't make sense to me to walk away from it premature. I'd rather walk away when I think about training and I get sort of, if I just have a bad feeling in my stomach about it, then that's my body telling me it's probably time. If I am fired up about it, then that's a signal that I should still be doing this. And why walk away from something you love prematurely?
You know, I just love the interface. You know, when I think about your experience, you know, Navy SEAL, Divinity School, Kennedy School, you know, how do you envision pulling that all together in your professional life?
Wow. Yeah. I've been grappling with that question for a while. I'm very much wanting to be a member of the ski team still and keep competing. But there's a big hole in my life right now because of it, that was filled by school. And then all of a sudden that just ended like 2 months ago. And I love reading, but I know I was reading to the point of exhaustion for 3 years, just so much reading in school. But, you know, I want to continue reading and learning, but I want to feel kind of have a good blend of being an athlete, but in a way that serves purpose. I recently applied to be a mentor for Classroom Champions and just found out that I was approved for this upcoming academic year, which would be great, because coming off of being a student, I feel like I had a lot of enthusiasm for this kind of athlete student blend or student athlete blend, and that this would be a great way to create short internet-based instructional videos for the kids. And it's all done through the Classroom Champion nonprofit in a guided way. And I'm really excited about that. And then I've been, after Pyeongchang, approached by a sports agent who wants to kind of develop and hone my message in a speech format, and maybe this can be a way to talk to people and deliver my message. A few years ago, I have to say, I kind of was reluctant to do media engagements or to even put myself out there, because I felt like, as you said, that the ethos of the military, and specifically the community that I came from in the SEAL teams, is to do your job, do it well, and be quiet. And I say that and I'm talking to you for a podcast, but I have since kind of thought that if you don't ever say your story or tell your message, then it dies when I die. And that I do have lessons to pass on to others. And I'm not talking about specific operations or anything that I was doing specifically in the military. So that there's a balance between this. And so I'm trying to achieve that balance and live so that I can do what I want to do, and hopefully it helps some people along the way through either, most importantly, the actions that I'm doing, but also even the words that I can say.
You'll be out there at least for another season and take it day by day, but you'll be based in Boston, it sounds like.
Yes, I just moved out to the Natick area, and I think it's a great just a great place, close access to Boston, but a little more of a rural setting. I have close proximity to the Weston Ski Track at the Leo J. Martin Golf Course, and they do a wonderful job there of providing, at a minimum, a 2-kilometer loop. If the natural snow is not doing a great job, they're pumping in the Charles River water to make snow. And I like being a sea level athlete as well. I've found that I respond well to it. So for personal reasons as well.
Okay, so I know it sounds like you did a lot of reading the past 3 years, but one of the things I was already in my brain before you brought up, like, I've done a ton of reading. Like, what's on your night table? What do you read? Like, for non-academic stuff.
Right now, I'm enjoying getting back into fiction. I most recently read Lincoln and the Bardo by George Saunders. It was really, really wonderful. And with references to Buddhism and everything, it was really, really neat to see it. It's a wonderful book. Before that, I read the biography of Ulysses S. Grant by Ron Chernow. And that was another amazing story of a figure who was closely tied with Lincoln, and a very interesting time in the nation's history to read about.
Politics, is that in your future?
But I have some friends from the Kennedy School or from the military that are running for U.S. Congress. I haven't thought about it really. I mean, I've thought, what would it be like? And I certainly wouldn't consider running now. And I don't know. I'm definitely not there right now. And I mean, I think it would be a wonderful way to serve, but you have to be at the right time in one's own life. And I'm not there right now. And I don't know if I'll ever will be.
Well, thanks for your time. I got to say, I'm psyched we chatted.
Thank you so much.
I'm psyched. And so thanks for your service, and good luck next year.
Thanks for your interest. I really appreciate it. Take care, Jason.
Thanks for listening to Nordic Nation.